What's going on, everybody? This is your boy DJ Anonymous with Sports Biz Music, the podcast, episode 77. And I got a special guest on the show. I have Ari Rogerman on the show today. How you doing, man?
Hey, good, man. How are you?
I'm good, man. How's the weather over there in Arizona?
Well, actually, I'm based in Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
And it's actually not snowing, and it's in the mid-60s today, so we're feeling pretty good about it.
Yeah, because a few months ago, I seen y'all was in that cold blast, wasn't y'all, right?
Oh, yeah, I was pretty miserable. I grew up in Phoenix, so I'm not really used to it yet.
Yeah, man, so introduce yourself to the people before we get into these questions.
I am a sports reporter who works for The Athletic, which is an emerging journalism company, subscription-based. So I write about and cover Ohio State football and recruiting, write long, informative, deep stories. And it's all part of the Athletic app and website where people pay a small monthly fee to read and get the app. We've been doing journalism now for almost 10 years since I graduated college. And, basically just follow the Ohio State football program around, build relationships with coaches and players, and try my best to inform the readers as much as I can about the happenings in Ohio State football and college football in general. So it's a pretty fun job, and I'm happy to be on.
That's cool. So before we get into that, tell us about your beginnings. What made you want to be a journalist?
Well, it's kind of funny. It just kind of happened. When I first got to college, I was a business major, and I remember sitting in some of the business classes thinking, Everybody's a business major. There's nothing that I'm going to learn in these classes that, is going to help me. It's just a generic degree, and I've always loved sports like most kids do. And I just thought, well, I'm not good enough to play, so how do I get involved in this? And I guess, back then I could have gone into law and tried to be an agent, or maybe stuck with business and tried to become a salesman or do something in the sports industry. But I always felt that, if there was any place I could be, I'd want to be at a football game. I'd like to go. And what's a job that can get me into the arenas and into the stadiums and stuff? So I didn't really think it through that much. And then I all of a sudden switched my major from business to journalism. And then I started working at the student newspaper and kind of just found it by accident. But once I did, I fell in love with it and started to dedicate my life to being good at it. And, 10 years later, here I am. I still work hard every day and still need to improve. And I'm still relatively young, 31 years old. Still trying to kind of figure out the industry and, continue to progress in the industry. But, I get paid to go to football games. So there are worse lives than that, that's for sure.
Yeah, and how is that being able to go to the football games and also following the Ohio State recruiting? How's that experience?
It's interesting. I go to every single game, home and away. You're constantly talking to coaches, texting, DMing, trying to get information. You're trying to build relationships with people and kind of get to know them so you can properly tell their stories. And if anybody's been following Ohio State over the course of the past year or so, there's been a lot going on. With Urban Meyer's retirement, some of the scandal stuff, and of course the team's always very good. So, it's a good time, and I found that being a sports writer isn't necessarily only about going to football games. You gotta, write about the things that occur all year round when there's only 13 or 15 games of a year at most. Explain roster building. You have to explain the personal lives of the people who are involved in it, because in Columbus, Ohio, it's a very deep interest in everything that occurs with this team. A lot of people live and breathe and live and die by how good Ohio State football is, and there's a lot of people who want to pay to read. There's a lot of people who pay a lot of money to go watch these games. So it's my job to best inform and bring context to people the best that I can, so that people have an understanding of what's going on in the sport and kind of just how the team is trending year round, every year, no matter what. It never stops.
Like you said, Ohio State, which, I grew up a UM fan, so I'll never forget that national championship. We should have won that national championship. That was, I don't care what no one said, that was a pass interference, but, that's, that was an 0-2. I guess we all move on. But But yeah, like just looking at Ohio State, when everything that's been going on, especially like football wise, like I'm a football head, so like my wife, she hates it when football season come around, and like I just watch it like all day. But I know that Urban Meyer, and he had his scandals and stuff and whatnot. But what about the new coach? What have you seen like during the, I guess, the spring training? Like, what's, is he like bringing like a new impact to the program?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, it's very hard to tell because he's in his 30s. He's never been a head coach before, Ryan Day. Mm-hmm. And he's replacing a legend. I mean, when Urban Meyer came to Ohio State, he already won two national championships in Florida. He's mm-hmm. one of the most famous figures in the entire sport. So now you're replacing him with somebody who's never done it before and somebody who people view as an up-and-coming coach and somebody who's going to be a very good football mind, but there's a lot of challenges in coaching college football. You know, people think who's going to call the FCS fourth down play or who's going to design the best game plan, but what people don't understand about college football is it's about building a program.
Right.
The best teams in the country, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, these places have built programs. And it's about attracting talent. It's about getting the best players mm-hmm. in the country to come play for you. And I tell people this all the time, and I don't know if people realize it, but winning college football national championships and playing in the playoffs and doing all those things is about which teams have the best players. It's right. 85% talent, 15% coaching. So what Urban Meyer did at Ohio State was he built an infrastructure in the program with the money and facilities and all the things and the resources that Ohio State have at disposal and built a juggernaut that attracts the best players in the country every single year. So people want to know, is the new head coach bringing his new buzz to it, or is he changing things, or he's doing... what he has to do is he's got to continue to attract the best players in the country to come play here.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to do that through his own style. But he also has to be smart enough to know that, you know, like any company, Ohio State's football program was built very well by a very good CEO, Urban Meyer.
Right.
And he's got to do his best to live within the realms of the infrastructure that's already been built.
Mm-hmm.
So will he be as good as Urban Meyer? I don't know. It's kind of hard to compare a first-year head coach to somebody who won three national championships and became one of the best coaches of all time.
Right.
But I do think that he does have the tools and the ability through what Ohio State has and what Urban Meyer built to be a very successful coach. So talk about pressure, right? Like, you're a first-year head coach, they lose three games, you get fired. Like, I mean, like, that's, you know, and it's kind of a dramatic thing to say, and I think a lot more than 1 year, but he's under a tremendous amount of pressure to win because Ohio State doesn't take losing too kindly.
Yeah, I see that, like, with the fans, are like, with me, like, going to a smaller school, FIU, and doing an internship as an equipment manager and just seeing, like, the media, like, that come out there. And I'm like, imagine I'm at FIU, but imagine, like, the UMs and the Ohio States, the Alabamas, the Floridas, the Oregons, the USCs, like, the bigger programs. Like, when I was interning, I was telling my boys, my homeboys, my brothers, that college football, you know, college sports in general, but really college football really bringing the money for the school. And I remember hearing the coach, he was like, you know, scheduling the schools and everything, and like either it's gonna be home and home or home and away or a neutral site. Like, a lot of people don't understand, like, you know, the ADs and these and the coaches, like, they, it's like an all year round like job. Like, you gotta recruit, you gotta, you know, work out the athletes, and you got the season, but even within the season you gotta go to the different meetings and schedule like future opponents, and also you gotta recruit for the following class. Like, it's a lot of work. And a lot of people don't understand that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think people understand that coaching,
mm-hmm.
in coaching, you're actually coaching probably 20% of your time.
Right. Like,
you're actually on the field coaching, whether it be in a game or in practice, 20% of your time.
Mm-hmm.
The other 80% is about recruiting and, you know, banquets and, you know, player relations and camps and visits. And if people don't understand, Ohio State spends millions of dollars every year recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
He's on an airplane. I mean, he flew. Ryan Day flew from Columbus, Ohio, to Hawaii at the end of the year to recruit an offensive lineman. He stayed in Hawaii for 3 hours, got back on the plane, and flew back home. Like, it's like the first person on planet Earth who's ever flown to Hawaii and not spent at least one night there. Right. You know, but that's just kind of the way the world of coaching goes. I mean, I think 80% of their time is spent acquiring talent, recruiting, making phone calls, getting on airplanes, visits, going to high school football games, going to high school basketball games, doing everything that they can to acquire the best talent. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you talk about the Nick Sabans and the Dabo Sweeneys and some of the best coaches in college football. Yes, they're great on-the-field coaches. They have great minds. They've got great staffs. They create great, great game plans. But what do? The best? They build their rosters the best. And that's why the same 5-6 teams every year are doing, you know, the same stuff. Every single year you can turn on the college football playoff selection show and you see the same group of 6-8 teams. And it's because those 6-8 teams have spent the money and have the infrastructures to go acquire the best talent.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about who designs the best game plan. Maybe that's about who wins the national championship. But if you're on that stage, it's because you have the best players. Right. And that's what this job's about.
I'm glad you brought up the college football playoffs. As a person in the media, do you think that the college football playoffs get it right every year?
Get what? Sorry about that.
Do they get it right? Like when they choose the four teams, do you think they get it right every year, or they make some mistake?
You talking about when the players pick which schools to?
No, I'm talking about like the college football playoffs when the committee when they select the teams.
Oh,
yeah.
The committee. You mean like do they get the right teams every
year? Yes.
You know, I don't know. It's a very hard job, and I think they get the top two teams right every year. But every year there's a debate between number 4, 5, and 6.
Right.
So, like for instance, Ohio State was the sixth best team in the country last year, and their resume was virtually identical to Oklahoma's.
Mm-hmm.
So Oklahoma went into the playoff and they got spanked.
Right.
Ohio State might have played a better game. Ohio State only had one loss. They were conference champion. You know, all the same things that Oklahoma had. And the committee had to decide between Oklahoma and Ohio State. And at the time, I guess Oklahoma had one of the best offenses in the country and, you know, all that stuff. But I think it's a tremendously hard job to do because it's funny. People thought that the BCS system, they were going to, you know, get rid of that. They were going to create a playoff system. And once they did that, then all the problems were going to go away. Well, as hard as it was to pick 1 and 2 in the old days, it's hard to pick 4 and 5 now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that if you put, the way you have to look at it is if you put yourself in a position where you're going to be in a debate the way Ohio State did last year,
mm-hmm.
then you have to live with the results of that. Ohio State lost by 100 to Purdue, so at the end of the year when they were left out, they could get mad and say, hey, we should have been able to go to Oklahoma. But if they would have just taken care of their own business, it wouldn't have been a debate.
Right.
So I don't know if they're 100%, you know, able to get it right. And that's the thing, you can never answer that question, man,
mm-hmm.
because you can't rewrite history. Once they're in, they're in. But Ohio State won the first college football playoff because they were the number 4 seed. And they might not have gotten in if they would have put TCU in 4 years ago.
Yeah, because
but everybody said they got it right because the 4 seed won. Well, this year the 4 seed got blown out, so they got it wrong.
Right.
It's a never-ending debate, and you can't really ever prove it right or wrong. All I'll say is it's a very, very hard thing to do.
Yes, it is, because even with the, you know, when I talk amongst my friends, we always say that, you know, I feel like they should expand the league a little bit. But then I look at March Madness, and they got like 68 teams, and then you have some teams that was qualified to get in. They never got in, so I'm like, wow, like, it'll never be solved. You know, something like that would never be solved. It will always be.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they expanded the playoff field, it would be entertaining.
Yeah.
I think people would like it more. I think if it was an 18 playoff, you know, it would be more expansive. But listen, man, if it's an 18 playoff, they're going to argue about who the number 9 team should be. Like, it's always I mean, you watch the college football, the NCAA tournament in basketball,
mm-hmm.
there's huge hour-long shows debating who the last 3 teams in the tournament should be. There's there's a million people deciding, well, this team should be the number 68 team.
Right.
This team should be. Even they're all the way down to almost 70 and they still can't decide. But at least in college basketball, if you're the 70th best team who's on the bubble, then, you know, you don't feel quite as bad for leaving a really good team out. But, you know, the thing that people also have to understand about college football is a completely different sport.
It is.
It's far more intense. It's physical. It's, you know, preparing for games is hard. So, like, when people say, well, you should expand it to 8 or 16, it's like, well, when are those games going to be played? And that's a major, major concern because there's just not enough time. So, you know, they'd have to restructure the entire scheduling portion of the season. And, and these kids aren't getting paid to begin with. And they're putting their bodies, they're putting their bodies through a lot. And now the expanding it is going to make more games. It's more labor. It's more hits that they're going to have to take. It's all that stuff. So there's so much more to take into account when it comes to the college football playoff field than just did they get the right teams in.
Yeah, because when you think about expanding the playoffs, like from 8 to 10 to 12, you know, a lot of people will want that, but then they also talk about, like, oh, you got to eliminate the bowls. But then, you know, that's when the money come in. Like, you know, some cities don't want to lose the money. But I'm like, you can kind of integrate the, like, how they did the playoffs now. Like, they had, like, the Peach Bowl 1 year will host a round. The Orange Bowl will host a round. The Rose Bowl. Like, there's so many things you could do. But, you know, like you said, like, these kids don't get paid. And I always been, like, an activist. Because I've been following it since, like, I believe when Northwestern was trying to pass, like, having their own union. That was back in, I think, like 2010, 2011. I was an undergrad at the time, and I was, you know, as for a person that's a former athlete in high school, and now seeing, like, how these athletes, you know, these football, basketball, baseball players, like, in high school and college, you know, getting so much exposure, but they don't get the money that they deserve, in my opinion. It causes, like, a rift between, like, I guess some of the players and the programs, and, like, now they having, like, I remember someone was saying that, you know, they should have college football, they should allow the kids to leave at least their sophomore year, you know, instead of, like, waiting their junior year, because you remember back in the day, Adrian Peterson, when he came in as a freshman, everyone was like, he should have just left the following year, you know, instead of waiting his junior year, you know. So, do you have, like, an opinion on that? Like, about players getting paid or whatnot?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that college football in general makes billions and billions of dollars. And the players who are doing the labor don't get any of it.
Right.
But I think it's also very complicated because there are a lot of football programs that don't have the caliber of athlete that an Ohio State does.
Mm-hmm.
That's like you bring up Adrian Peterson as the example here. Well, Adrian Peterson was like the biggest freak of all time.
Yes.
Like, you know, most freshmen that come to Ohio State, even the most physically gifted freshmen, it takes them 2 years to really be ready to play, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about the highest level of athlete there is in the country. So, you know, for them to be able to go to the league early, I don't think that's out of the question. I don't think you can put a 19-year-old kid in the NFL.
Right.
Especially now that we're trying to protect player welfare and stuff.
Yes.
But, you know, I do think that college football is probably on the verge of potentially creating a way for people to benefit or profit off of their likeness. So, like, the more famous athletes, like an Adrian Peterson or, you know, like a, you know, Tim Tebow-type player can go do a Gatorade commercial and get paid for it while he's in college.
Mm.
And I think that would just, you know, help, like, athletes play. But I think that people think, too, that athletes are, like, mistreated. And I do think that the other side of the coin is they get free room and housing, you know, for 4 years. They get a free education. They get all the food that they want. They get a per diem when they're on the road.
Mm.
I mean, they get money. Like, they're not, I mean, some of them might be broke, but they don't need the money when they're in college. They're taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's a very complex issue, and I think that there is room somehow for kids to get compensated some way. I think they put in a lot of work, and it's absolutely impossible for them to have a job. But, you know, there's a lot of people, too, in this country that want to go to college and want to make it a little bit, have to come out of college with $100,000 of student loan debt, you know, that they don't never have to do. So I do think that they're exploited to some extent, but I also do not buy into the fact that they're completely, you know, left to fend for themselves, because they do get a lot of benefits that most people still have. And that's who, how many people in this world get a chance to say, we get to live here for free and we get to eat every meal for free for the next 4 years? I mean, that's a huge benefit. That's a lot of money.
Right.
When I was in college, I was paying $1,000 a month for my rent, right? So if you extrapolate that over, you know, 7 months, a year, 4 years, it's $40,000. So, I mean, it's a lot of money.
Yeah, because even living with my mom, it was still expensive. Like, the books were still expensive. Like, people understand,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, the books are expensive. It's a complete fraud.
Yeah.
And then you pay $150 for a book, or $200 for a book, and you crack it open twice the entire semester. Then you go back and you trade the book back in, and you get $10 for it, and they resell it again for $185.
Yeah.
So it's a complete scam.
It is. Like, that's why, you know... When it comes to the athletes, not just athletes, but students in general, like, you know, me and my wife, she's a teacher, so we always talk about, like, why, you know, college costs so much. Like, it should be, honestly, I feel like public schools should be at least free or get, like, a strong discount, because we were just talking about this yesterday, like, how, like, you know, I could be from Miami, but for me to go to Ohio State, it's going to cost me double, because I'm out of state. I'm not from Ohio, you know?
It's probably triple or four times as much, to be honest. Yeah.
Right.
Ohio State tuition is crazy.
Right. And then you also got to think, besides the tuition, I got to fly to Ohio, or if I want to be crazy and drive 2-3 days, but still, like, it's expensive, you know, especially when to come back for the holidays.
Yeah, and then you got to buy furniture and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's an entirely different conversation about the educational situation in the country that I'm not really that qualified to talk about. I just know that I was just using it as a point to say that although I think that athletes should and could potentially make more money or have more opportunity to profit off of their work when they're in school, especially because America is a free enterprise country, you know, they also aren't completely in there. There's people who are worse off than them. So, you know, but that's an ongoing debate that, you know, I think will go on for years, and I would not be surprised if in the next few years some rules to change based on just, you know, athletes being able to profit off their likeness.
Right. So to get back to you and your career, I seen before the Athletic, you was working for Cleveland.com, covering Ohio State, of course. How was that working for Cleveland.com and also working for the Athletic?
You know, Cleveland.com and Athletic are two very different places.
Mm-hmm.
Cleveland.com is a newspaper because it's affiliated with the Plainfield up in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
It's a major newspaper, it's a major publication, and they took a chance on me when I was a little bit younger and gave me a really, really good job. And they trained me how to do this job. I learned from a lot of the best in the industry. And the reason why I was qualified to work at the Athletic is because of Cleveland.com. So working there was a pleasure, and I miss it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But their business models are completely different. You know, Cleveland.com is based on viewership and traffic and how many people click on stories, whereas the Athletic, which I joined when it was first starting, was a startup company that's designed based on subscription revenue. So it's not so much about how many stories we write or, you know, how many people click or read on your story. It's more so about how many people will pay or subscribe, you know, $3 or $4 a month so that they can have access to the app. So it's a completely different mindset. It's in-depth journalism. We write bigger, longer, more well-reported stories. We take more time with the stories that we write. At Cleveland.com, you just write constantly. So it's just a different type of animal. Both places are great.
Mm-hmm.
I love working at both. But I just felt at the time when I took the Athletic job 2 years ago that it was the right move and a chance for me to take a risk on a startup company that I believed could change the world of journalism. So far, the company in the time since I started, you know, went from 2 or 3 markets in this country to basically every single major market in America. So I think it's a very, very promising young app. I think a lot of people have enjoyed it. There's a lot of great writers there since grew up reading Sports Illustrated, and you know, there's Sports Illustrated writers on the app now. And, you know, they've hired some talent from across the country where a lot of people are really taking notice, and there's no ads or videos or anything, so you know, it can be a pain in the ass sometimes when you're on the internet trying to read a story and you're bombarded with all these videos and ads. You can't even read the story. On The Athletic, it's completely clean. There are no pop-up ads. It doesn't do anything. All it is the writing. And I think a lot of people who have, you know, kind of grown accustomed to reading stuff online have really enjoyed the cleanliness of just the experience of reading it.
Yeah, because, you know, like, people don't realize too, I grew up in Miami, of course, born and raised, and like the Miami Herald, not too long ago, just started like a subscription, subscription based like formula to force people to sign up, because you know, it's sad to say, but you know, newspapers, you know, like real like newspapers is hard to print out nowadays. And you know, rather just doing that, you know, they learned that they had to go online. They had to go, you know, digitally. And honestly, I love it because it forced people to take action, because a lot of us do love to read and, like, you know, get, like, up to date from, like, all our favorite teams, whether it's professional, whether it's college, whether it's high school or individual athletes. And seeing how the Athletic, like, itself, like, is just growing and growing and growing and growing, like, it's something that, you know, I would love to follow. Because, like I said, like, I just grew up reading Sports Illustrated. Like, I remember I just get the magazines, like, every month. You know, even the swimsuit edition. And my mom used to ask me why they sending me this stuff. I'm like, it's part of the subscription, but... it's a beautiful thing.
People just need to realize, too, that, like, journalism is important.
Yeah.
Like, people need it, you know. And right now, the industry is kind of in a weird place because they're trying to figure out how to monetize it. Nobody knows, like, what's the way that these companies, because, you know, if you've been paying attention, a lot of newspapers are laying people off, and, you know, there aren't a lot of opportunities because I don't know if they're making enough money on ad revenue alone to employ all the people that they used to employ. I'm sure the Miami Herald probably had 250 journalists working there at one point when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And now it's probably 50. It's just hard to monetize. So the reason why I took this job at The Athletic is because, you know, they're saying, hey, you used to pay for magazine subscriptions. You used to pay for your newspaper to get delivered. We can't give it away for free anymore. And I think people online became accustomed to having to get all that stuff for free, and it just doesn't pay the bills.
Right.
So, you know, if you want the premium content, you want to read local journalism in Miami at the Miami Herald, you shouldn't be able to get that for free. I mean, there's people who are working every day to produce that stuff. People just think that the words just appear on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a tremendous amount of time to report and build relationships and, you know, travel to these places and do the things that we have to do in order to do our jobs. And for whatever reason, when the first, you know, media companies started going on the internet, they started giving it away for free. And then now that the internet has taken over the world and people don't read the newspaper anymore and they only read online, how can we continue to do this for free? So I think you're going to start seeing, you know, more and more newspapers and every other, I think this is subscription-based model is going to be the entire model for journalism, because it's the only way to sustain itself.
Right. Yeah.
And if you want to read local journalism about Miami crime or Miami football or all the things that are happening in the city that you live in, those are specialized content that you can't get for free anymore. So, you know, right now, speaking of Miami, we have an Athletic, you know, Miami division that covers the Heat and covers the Hurricanes and, you know, all the teams out there. And if you want to be completely up to date with everything that's going on with Miami, take $4 a month. You have access to our app and you can read everything about Miami. And it's the same thing in Columbus and all the other, you know, markets that we're in. It's just very, very hard in the world of journalism today to expect that the work that we're doing is going to be given for free. Same thing as going to a barber. You don't get your hair cut for free, do you?
Nope.
When you do your taxes, does your accountant do your stuff for free?
Nope. They need their money.
Do anything for free?
Nah, you got to, like, I tell people all the time, when you spend money, the money goes around. So when you spend money, you got to think about it like, all right, I spent $5, $10, $20, $30, $40, $100 on whatever, right? In your mind, you're going to be like, all right, I'm spending this money, but this money going to somehow come back to me. You know, like, you can't have that.
Yeah, for sure. You support a certain industry,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden, the ads and stuff that are on those industries, those businesses will be, you know, people will go to those businesses more, and it's cyclical, you know? And it's just like journalism got hit hard. A lot of really good people, a lot of really good journalists lost their jobs because they couldn't sustain this free model.
Right.
And Cleveland.com is still free to this day, but if you go to Cleveland.com, there's a ton of ads because it's the only possible ways they can monetize all the traffic they're getting. So it's just a matter of whether or not the company that you work for thinks that the free model can sustain itself. But, you know, we're not talking about a lot of money here either. I mean, we're talking about, you know, $3 or $4 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And people are paying for Netflix, and people are paying for Hulu. They're paying for Apple Music. I mean, every single way that people entertain themselves is something that people have to pay for. So why wouldn't you pay to read about your favorite sports teams? It's all part of the same, you know, entertainment industry, right?
Exactly, yeah. People understand, too, like, $5, $10 a month for these companies, it do add up, you know. And, like, I like how, you know, companies like, you know, the Athletic, companies like, you know, Apple and every, like, even ESPN, like, I've subscribed to them $4.99 a month for the streaming service. It's, people want to understand, like, it's a beautiful thing. Like, you're not paying that much every month. And also, you guys, you know, like I said before, like, for you to pay this $5, $10, $6 a month, like, you're receiving better quality, because that's something that they don't understand either, especially in the media. Like, the more money that you give to these companies, the more, like, the quality get better, the more, like, they create these small documentaries and everything.
For sure, you can go look at free websites that do sports writing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of them. I mean, you can go read any website you want, blog, anything. And then go pay $3 a month and read The Athletic and tell me what's the reason why is because The Athletic has the money and the ability to go hire better talented writers because they're getting money.
Right.
And we have documentaries and podcasts, and the stuff that we're doing is all done and it's funded how? By the people who support the company.
Yes.
It's the same thing with Netflix. Everybody loves Netflix. Everybody paid $10 or $12 a month to watch Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And then these new shows come out and say, holy crap, that was an amazing show. Well, why do you think that show exists?
Because the money.
People are paying for it.
Right.
You know? So it's just kind of how it works. And I think The Athletic is kind of using itself as a model of sports writing and being the Netflix of sports writing. And look, I get it. Like, paying $10 a month for Hulu and $10 a month for Apple Music. And $10 a month for Apple News, and $10 a month for Netflix and Amazon Prime and all that stuff. It's a lot of money. I get it. Like, if you were subscribed to, like, 10, 15 different things, you might be spending $150 a month just on your entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
But listen, man, if you go to the movies with your family, you take your wife and your child to the movies, and you buy 3 tickets, a popcorn, 3 sodas, and a box of candy, it's a $60 investment now.
Right.
And everything that we do in this world is expensive. You can't even go to dinner at Chili's with 4 people without it being $100.
Right.
So, like, you know, the part of the thing is that, you know, that's just kind of the way the society in general is. You know, everything costs money. I wanted to go to a concert last week, and the tickets were $195. I mean, that's a one night of entertainment. People used to spend $500 to go on vacation. You can't even spend $500 for a week to entertain yourself. I mean,
no, you
want
can't.
To go to Top Golf, you want to do anything, it's expensive.
Yes, sir.
For $3 a month to get access to the website, you know, that's whatever. I mean, people are spending, you know, $7, $8 a day at Starbucks. So, I mean, it's all about what you prioritize. If you're somebody who consumes sports writing and it's something that's important to you, people look at it and read it every single day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at the app and get their news and, you know, learn things and enjoy it. I mean, that's a very relatively small amount to pay than, you know, for a cup of coffee. You know, it's the same price.
Right, because, you know, even with my podcast, like, I don't care how I get my information. Like, before we started recording, like I said, like, I do my research. So I don't care if I have to spend, like, a few dollars a month just to read on articles and be like, you know, I want to use this information on my next interview. You know, that's, you got to spend that money, but guess what? You get to have, like, a great, you know, conversation, a great interview, like how we are having right now. And it's helping me bringing more fans to my podcast, but also it's helping both parties, you know, because a lot of people may not know about the Atlantic, you know, the Atlantic, but now they do, because it's a growing company, you know, so.
Yeah, they spent a ton of money advertising. It was a startup company. I mean, they spent millions and millions and millions of dollars designing the app and, you know, reaching out to people and advertising and all the stuff that goes into creating a business. You know, but, you know, for us, you know, part of my job is to do radio interviews and podcasts and stuff. So, you know, I don't mind coming on it and kind of explaining what we do and how we do it. And, you know, if it brings one person to read it, then, you know, that's great. And if it doesn't, that's great too. I mean, we're all kind of in the same world together. And, you know, if you have a half an hour, an hour to spare for somebody, then just do it. You know, what's going to happen? You know?
Right.
Only good things can happen. Nothing bad can.
Right. And I have about a couple more questions before we, you know, we end the podcast. What challenges do you have for up and coming journalists? What advices do you have for up and coming journalists? Whether it's like the different challenges in the media, like what advices do you have for them?
Work, and work for nothing. I mean, when I was in college, I was the sports editor or one of the assistant sports editor of the student newspaper. I worked at the local newspaper doing high school sports. I had an internship at MLB.com, and I had an internship at Rivals.com, all of which paid me zero. I made no money. And, you know, it's about getting your name out there and working hard. And the truth is that most college journalists suck at it. I sucked at it. Everybody sucks at it at that age. But you got to do everything you can to practice and practice and practice. And you have to be willing to know that you're not going to make any money in the first few years. You're not going to make any money in college doing it. You're not going to make any money in your first job. My first job, I made $18,000 a year before debt. I had to, like, have a second job to support myself. My parents had to give me a few $100 a month so I could make my rent. You know, and there aren't a lot of jobs right now in this industry. And part of the reason why is for the reasons that we were just talking about. You know, there aren't a lot of, you know, opportunities because newspapers are kind of on the way down because of all this advertising stuff. So if you really love it and you really want it to be your life, you know, just like everything, you know, it's a competitive industry. You got to work hard. You got to pay your dues. And you got to reach out to people as much as you can to, you know, get advice, to learn, to take criticism, and all that stuff. I mean, when I was a kid, I made no money. I didn't think that I was going to be able to make it in the industry, but I just kept working hard. I kept trying to get better. I reached out to successful journalists, sent them my work, asked for feedback, took criticism, learned from all that stuff, and I worked, and, you know, 6 years later, I had a really good job doing what I wanted to do. So there's a lot of people who go to school for journalism and, you know, do it for a few years and then just go, you know what, I can't do this anymore. I don't make enough money. It's too hard. There aren't enough jobs. I don't love it anymore. It's too many hours. You know, I'm just going to go work at a bank where I can get a job, where I can make a living. You know, that happens. A lot of people who get journalism degrees don't work in journalism. So if it's something that you really want, you just got to keep doing it. You got to be willing to move. You got to be willing to take jobs that you wouldn't otherwise take. You know, there's a lot that goes into this kind of thing. And, you know, it's all about, you know, appetite and desire to want to accomplish something. And that sounds like a cliche thing because it's the way it is with everybody, but that's just kind of the world we live in right now, man. Like, that's it. Like, if you want something and there's a lot of people who want it, you got to outwork it.
You can't really, how you call it, you can't really stay in the same spot or be afraid to move because, I don't want to do this or I'm afraid what people would think of, like, my move. Like, I have a best friend, he's a firefighter, and he just got promoted, and I was and he was telling me, like, man, like, I'm 27 years old, and I don't want to be that guy that wait till I'm like 35 or 36 to move up in the fire department. And I was telling him, like, man, you got the right mindset, because most people would just settle. You know, most people wouldn't want to get promoted. They'll probably just stay there for the rest of their life. And I'm not knocking them, because there's some people that just want to make a certain amount of money or a certain amount of, they want to have that certain lifestyle until they get older. But it's just like, why not just you know, if you feel like you could do better, just do better, you know? And that's the same thing.
People who just, you know, have different goals. Some people want to make $50,000 a year with a lot of lifestyle and never worry about it. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, being in journalism in general, just finding a job is hard.
Very hard.
Jobs. I mean, there's a lot of people who have been laid off from other really good jobs, and a lot of overqualified people taking jobs they want better than, because there's just isn't that many in the industry. So you've got 1,000, let's say you have 1,000 jobs and 5,000 people want those jobs. It's super competitive.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be able to rise above it, and you got to stay, you know, focused and determined to be good, to be different, to try new things, and do your best to, you know, stand out and be one of 1,000.
Right. And as a media person, as a journalist, give me your top 5 moments, you know, in your career so far, in your 10-year career as a journalist.
Yeah. That's hard. because the thing that people have to understand is when you're a journalist, you're not a fan of the team. Mm-hmm. If you're a good journalist, you're not supposed to be a fan of the team.
Right.
So, like, you can't just say, well, Ohio State won the national championship in 2014. That was one of the best moments ever.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't care if they win or lose. But, like, being at the national championship game, I remember probably my top moment was, you know, being in the press box. I was in the AT&T Stadium in Dallas for the Cowboys play. And I remember thinking, I worked my entire life to be a college football writer, and here I am sitting in the press box for the national championship game, and I'm getting paid to be here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was a really good moment. When Gene Smith, Ohio State athletic director, you know, called me out for breaking the news on Ryan Day's taking over for Urban Meyer, that was a nice moment. you know, but like getting hired at the Athletic and taking the risk of working at a company that not that many people had heard of yet, and leaving a major publication was a top 5 moment. And of course, getting the job at Cleveland.com as a young journalist is a great moment. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like I don't really tie my best moments to how good Ohio State is. I tie my best moments to kind of the things that I've achieved in the industry, and you know, that's a few of them there. But, you know,
that's
kind of a tough question.
Yeah, I always get that from everyone because, you know, like they say, like, there's so many great moments, especially in any industry, and you can't really have a top 5 moment, but I always ask people that because some people do, some people just, you know, they just tell they, you know, they few moments that they have and stuff like that, so... But that's what's up. And the last question is, where do you see yourself 5 to 10 years from now?
I hope to be a national college football writer at the Athletic. I think that when I joined this company, I had a vision that this was going to be a place that I worked at for a long time. And that was the first time in my entire life I thought that, hey, I'm going to take a journalism job, but I'm going to keep it for a really long time. Because people are always moving, opportunities come up, and then things change. But I felt like when I joined this company, that it was going to be an up-and-coming company that was going to change the landscape of the entire industry. And so far, it's done that in 2 years that I've been here. So, you know, I cover Ohio State now. My ultimate dream is to cover the sport in general, go to all the bigger games every weekend, and, you know, write some in-depth stuff during the week, and not be tied down to one specific team like I am now. So, I hope to accomplish that in the next 4 or 5 years. And, you know, 10 years from now, man, I can't even think about that. I'll be 41. I don't even want to think about that. I just hope that wherever it is, I've progressed and continue to reap the benefits from the hard work that I put into this industry and this job.
That's what's up, man. Like I always tell every guest, don't forget about me. If anything, whatever you have going on, you can always reach out and everything. And do you have any recognitions before we end the podcast? Any shout-outs?
No, I think I'm good. Shout out to The Athletic, right? Like Tony, if you like sports writing, go check it out. It's the best app in sports writing. And we've got, you know, 300 writers now. And until you get your favorite team covered, regardless of what it is. And, you know, if you listen to this or have anything that you want to say on my on Twitter, I'm Willie Wasserman, ARIWASSERMAN. And we'd love to hear from you guys. So I appreciate you having me on, man.
Thank you so much, man. And this has been your boy, DJ Anonymous, with Sports Biz Music, the podcast, episode 77. And we out.